Blog Talk Radio.
The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron. A podcast featuring Elvira Love and Deborah Voith, two out-of-the-broom-closet professional witches with over 70 years combined experience of making magic. This is a show on the LMC radio network. During each episode, Elvira and Deb will help you create rituals, cast spells, make potions, and much more besides. They'll spend time speaking about different goddesses from all over the world, paying attention to the ancient reverence of long-ago cultures, and infusing it with a modern perspective. Elvira, Deb, take it away.
Well, thank you, Nagashiva. Hello, Elvira.
Hello, Deb. How are you?
I'm doing fair to middling here. Doing good. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
So tonight we will continue this, I'd say, past month's theme of trickster energies and dancing with nature by talking about the fae and mythical creatures, friends or foe. But first, we're going to just catch up with each other a little bit. So, the last, I always feel like a little bit off kilter when it's been the last 2 weeks that we've been off.
Yes.
So just kind of thinking about what have I been up to. I have been getting ready for our local Belting Festival that's happening this Saturday, and that's put on by FAB, the Fellowship of Alternative Beliefs, and we have a small committee that that does three festivals a year. And then I've also been busy making candles and oils to sell at the festival and also to one of the local shops here, Altered State of Mind, where I also work there a couple days every month. I kind of took a little bit of time off, but now this past month or so, me and my sister are back there doing readings, Reiki, and also scheduling soul retrievals and past life journeying sessions. And with this, kind of nice that with this being the week of Beltane, this past weekend I also got to spend some time out in nature. We went up into the forest, and it was really lovely. It's very like early spring up there, so the forest is just beginning to kind of wake up from its long winter nap, and so the trees are budding. Some of the foliage is starting to crop through a little bit. I could hear the spring peepers peeping at night, and we saw a couple of loons out on the water. And we saw deer, and there's a lot of birds that are currently migrating, and so it was kind of nice seeing some of the different birds that were around. And my husband, John, saw a bear a little ways from our cabin one evening. Yeah.
Jeez.
And, that was pretty cool. And I experienced some possible fairy phenomena, just kind of seeing, like, quick movements out of the side of my eye during the day as I was hiking. And a couple of different times I thought I saw a couple little sparks of light at night. So that was certainly getting me in the mood for talking about our topic tonight.
Yeah, good.
How was your week, past 2 weeks, Elvira?
Oh, well, let's see. We had a lot of weather that is intense because I have come to find out that May, end of April and May specifically, mm-hmm. are the months where you have the tornadoes and you have lots of, you know, thunder, lightning, and believe it or not, hail, which to me is, you know, like, I always thought hail was for cold weather, but obviously because the temperatures are like fluctuating and we'll have, you know, 50 degrees and that in the night, and then we start getting up to 60s, and then we'll go to 80s, and, you know, it's, it is just this immense, you know, flow and, you know, just amazing. And, of course, that leaves me with frustration because I'm either got the heater on or the air conditioner on, depending on what temperature is. And then, you know, they were like, I know, it's back forth. And then by the time I get through with that, then it's like being aware of the weather. So they'll go weather, wind shears, which are the things that are fast winds across, but then it's a potential for tornadoes. So then they'll give you, you know, like you might throw in a, you know, a level five, a level three, because five is the big one, three, and that's like enhanced. So it means it's probable that you could, you know, it's kind of that midsection. So we've had tornado warning, well, watches. Warnings are, it's happening, get the hell out of there, find yourself a, you know, a hidey hole and go there. So I've begun to learn the structure here because California is totally different. And, you know, as I was saying to a friend of mine, there it's, you pack your go bag, you have it in the car, you have your things by the door, and it's run, just run, you know, get out of there. Here it's hide. So it's so opposite to all the years that we were so intensely involved with fires while I was living there. So that's been about, you know, on and off for the last week and a half. The rest of it is, you know, it's people are beginning to get more interested and come out and, you know, do different things. So we were, you know, my granddaughter had a fun run that she'd been training for, and so that happened, and, you know, so there's kind of, you know, those things, family stuff. We have a graduation coming up. My step-granddaughter is graduating high school, and, you know, so these are people I, you know, I may not have known in their very, very little years, but I've grown, you know, I've grown with them as they grew up and when I would come here. So family stuff, business has been, you know, good, not, you know, like knocking down doors and being stacked up, but it's definitely helpful. And I was very disappointed that we didn't do our show last week, but because of things that were beyond our control, we were able to, you know, reschedule it for this week. So I'm looking forward to that and found out some interesting things, which when, you know, we start talking about it. So, yeah. That's
we were so psyched up for it, too.
I know. I know. We've been talking about this now for almost 2 weeks. And as we both have said, we have more than enough for the show, for our information. So, So, there you go. That's where I'm at. So, I'm turning it back to you to get started.
Well, I am glad that the tornadoes didn't get you. And you aren't holding your dogs saying, we're not in Arkansas anymore.
Oh, my gosh.
Like Dorothy over the rainbow. which is also kind of a good lead-in going into, like, Dorothy. You know, I used to think of that as, like, a interdimensional travel that she did. So with that thought, I guess I'll just start out by just kind of talking in general terms about, like, who or what are the fae. The fae are also called fair folk or fairies, and they're legendary creatures that are found in stories and folklore all over the world. They are, I believe, interdimensional, magical nature beings. And some believe that they're somewhat related to angels, demons, or daemons. And also, a lot of people think that they're related to the genius loci, or also known as the guardian spirits of the land. And they can be very specific to certain places and sometimes specific to certain families. So folklore research reveals that people all over the world believe in these entities. And the term fairies has kind of become a very broad catch-all term for a wide variety of these types of spirits. And I know it would not even be practical to even try to list and define all of the creatures that fall under that heading of fairy, but hopefully we'll probably end up talking about a couple of the more common ones. So I kind of see fairies in general as kind of falling into three categories. And some people might think I'm oversimplifying it a little, and I might be, I'm not sure. But I see them as kind of being either the neutral fairies, the seely, or the unseely. And the neutrals are kind of neither good or bad. And the seely, like the seely and unseely are Scottish terms, but can be pretty broadly applied. And the seely are usually positive or benevolent in nature, while the unseely can be quite the reverse. So some of the more common lore about fairies might, you know, feature banshees, bogies, brownies. I'm just naming off a few of them. I'm not going to talk about all of them, but there's buckaboos, goblins, hobgoblins, pixies, trooping fairies, fauns, merpeople, leprechauns, gnomes, hobgoblins, gremlins, pookas, elves, knackers, you know, so it's like just with that couple of, you know, types of fairies, that's like, that is just a little drop in the bucket, because there's actually so many different of these nature spirits. And they can be connected to certain landforms like trees, mountains, rivers, lakes, and forests, but they're also known to occasionally inhabit urban areas, while others are very much connected to they're usually connected to a place or a family, and so they're household spirits. And they have certain magical powers. I don't want to go on too much, though, because I know that you have a lot of really cool things to say, too. So, what are some of your thoughts on defining fairies or saying what they're about?
Well, one of the things that I kind of came across is that, you know, when you get to fairies, it's like they are considered fae, but not all fae, which is F-A-E, are fairies. So it has a definition, but you can't, it's like, again, with all of what you just mentioned, you're unable to just lump everybody right over here. They're all fairies. That, you know, I mean, there's a lot of versions, and it's interesting you were talking about the seely and the unseely, because they have like a seely, they divided it, at least as I was reading, into like the seely court or the blessed court, and then you have, you know, the unseely court, which is, again, the more, how do I want to put these? They enjoy basically, rowdy ones. That's a good way to put it, rather than to be, you know, negative. But and you kind of gave a lot of those, so that, you know, I'm sitting here going, yeah, she got that one, that one, that one. I could chuck them all off. So it was real fun to get there, and I said, that's great. So I don't have to. And the Keeley court is fascinating because, you know, I don't know, you didn't really mention dyads, but, you know, dyads are a version, a type, and so they're basically, they're dyads of trees, and then you have naiads, which is bodies of water, and orads, which are mountains, and anthroci, which are flowers. And, you know, then they have groves and glens are alicides. And if I said any of that wrong, I apologize to both the dyads and anyone else. And, you know, that kind of got me because I remember the different myths and stories about dyads. And a lot of the Greek mythologies have stories about dyads. So, you know, that kind of struck me as, oh, this is kind of cool, you know, and, and you have that going on. So, but they divide it. So it's like a whole group, and then they kind of subdivide it into that, which I was, you know, well, that's great. And I think the other ones, I think you may have mentioned nymphs, but nymphs are also part of it, and they're definitely associated with nature. And, you know, they have descriptions. They're beautiful, etheric beings, and they are basically, they live in forests and meadows and bodies of water. And their beauty is, you know, their beautiful, slender, delicate features and, you know, with, you know, flowing hair and pale skin and, you know, so, you know, very natural, radiant energy. And I was like reading this and I'm going, well, anybody that came across a nymph definitely as a human being would probably be enthralled with them, you know, I mean, in terms of, you know, the circumstances. And I believe they are both male and female, so it is neither, you know, just a one thing. And the fact that they tend to be peaceful and but fiercely protective of their homes and natural locations. So and every one of these I read say it's about, they also can be mischievous. So we remember our trickster energy, which we have been talking about for the month that we have been talking about it. But they also enjoy playing pranks on humans, but they love music and dancing. So, again, very elaborate celebrations can be honoring them. And those two really stuck out for me because they were so, I mean, they had a lot of subcategories, and there are a lot of things that I have, you know, over the period of time with specifically, you know, the Greek mythology, but it's also, you know, the areas of the British Isles and, you know, those things where there are nature spirits, but they are very much ones that the gods and goddesses also get involved with, too, and have children with. So, and then those are demigods. So I thought that was interesting about that process because, I mean, we're just talking specifically about this group, but they also cross over into the divine higher realm. Again, with humans, they've also, you know, we know of all the different stories of, you know, the humans that have gotten involved with, you know, these nature spirits or these spirits. And the interesting thing was somewhere in my immense notes, we have famous fairies, okay? So, you know, I kind of want to see our red carpet here with Tinkerbell from Peter Pan, and then the one Oberon and Titania in Midsummer Night's Dream, and then, of course, the one we all remember, Puck from The Tempest. So, you know, you have famous fae that are there, so, you know. I think those are very interesting to me. So that's kind of my annotated version on the fae and how to, you know, what to go with. It's fascinating. And as you said, we've got, we if you go into it, as I said, we've got tons of notes on what they look like and what their actions are and where they live. And interesting, I do want to ask you a question. You talk about them being also attached to families and, you know, locations of that nature. Could you explain that? Because that was, that I kind of, I didn't find that in my notes, so I want to know.
Yeah, well, I know there's a few different ones that are attached to families. Like one of them is the Banshee. Which is a female spirit from Irish legend who signals the pending death of a family member by wailing or keening. And so the Banshee is said to not be malevolent or benevolent. And
it's always a female, but she and it's kind of peculiar for the Fae is that she's always alone. But what she is, mm-hmm. She's like an omen, or she is giving like a portending a death in the family. And so when mm-hmm. you would hear mm-hmm. her cry, she's a harbinger of death. She doesn't cause the death. Mm-hmm. And so, but she, so there's been reports of banshees, you know, for centuries. And there's like written records of banshees going back to the 12th century. But mm-hmm. They are often connected to families where they do their keening or their wailing to warn the family members that there's an impending death coming about.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So then bogies or bogarts are, well, they're kind of malevolent, but they're household spirits a lot of times, or they might inhabit like a local land place such as like fields or forest or marshes, but they're also sometimes household spirits. And they're kind of they're related or kind of similar to the puka. And there's also, and I'm not going to say it right, it's DWG, and that's the Welsh term to name for mm-hmm. Bogie or Bogarts.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're reputed to cause mischief by causing items to disappear and causing milk to sour and other like household mishaps.
Mm-hmm.
So, but they say like the more evil types of this, of Bogie or Bogarts reside mm-hmm. outdoors in the marshes or in the underground. And mm-hmm. they're responsible for the works of a more serious nature, such as the abduction of children. But mm-hmm. the milder ones are known to be household spirits. Mm-hmm. And then there's brownies. Brownies are also sometimes household spirits. They usually become aligned with one family who mm-hmm. they'll perform helpful services for. While the family sleeps. But they can be mischievous too. Like they get offended if offered payment for their services. And so the proper brownie etiquette is to leave out a cup of cream and a bit of tasty food to be enjoyed by the brownie while they're taking a break from their duties. And if that's not done, that's when the brownies can become mischievous. And they don't like criticism. So, yeah.
Okay.
So those are just like a couple of the household spirits. And so, you know, I guess when I think of fairies, the relationship between humans and fairies is long and kind of times very complicated. And so mm-hmm. just like what we talked about a couple of shows ago about, you know, the use of discernment in spirit work really applies with the Fae also, I think, because some of them are very friendly and some of them aren't. And so using discernment and caution should be used the same way as is used with other spirits, because just like people, there are some that are benevolent and some that are malevolent. And
right.
so it's just good
right.
to figure out what kind is in your area or has crossed your path, because they can be powerful mm-hmm. and they can be tricksters. And a lot of them are guardians of the land. So
mm-hmm.
you don't want you know, you can really upset them if you do things to abuse the land too, a lot of times.
Right. well, here's a
yeah.
question, you know, with the idea that, say, people are, you know, chopping down things and, you know, destroying things. We're not talking about fires. We're talking about conscious destruction
mm-hmm.
of large, you know, areas, that they would be incensed by that. They would be upset by
mm-hmm.
it. And things would then, I think, happen. And I think humans have tended mm-hmm. to separate from that idea that there is, you know, this connection. Most of, you know, most of the people out there just arbitrarily go do something and they really forget this other part that we're talking about. So it's interesting that in thinking about it, we would be setting up different things that could very easily happen that humans are going to immediately say, well, it was that person over there because they didn't want the property sold, or it was this group, or, you know, meaning in some way put it to another human rather than to the fae and the fairy groups and, you know, the areas, the energies that are part of that. And, you know, again, keeping it in alignment, we're trying to see how they stay connected and use that even when we are going to, you know, cut down a tree or do something. I mean, I know you
would probably
talk to the, you know, to the land or to the vegetation or whatever
you're
going to do something and offer them things. I know I've done that for as long as I can remember.
I actually had an experience like that. But for right now, I think it's time for us to take a little break. But we will be right back to take a look into a little more into the fae and also into mythical creatures. So break us away, Nagashiva.
You're listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Stay tuned, as more magic is coming your way right after these messages. LMC. You're listening to the LMC Radio Network, broadcasting out of Forestville, California, on the World Wide Web at LuckyMojo.com. The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman, Sundays, 3 to 4:30, Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places with Reverend Art and Reverend James, Mondays, 4 to 5:30, The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, in syndication, Tuesdays, The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Miss Phoenix LeFay, in syndication, Tuesdays, The Now You Know Show with Professor Porterfield, in syndication, Wednesdays, and The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Deborah Voith, Thursdays, 4 to 5, all time specific, add 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at LuckyMojo.com.
We are back.
Yes, we are.
And ready to take a look at mythical creatures. And I'm going to have Elvira lead us off, but I just wanted to mention real quick about what we were talking about, like at the tail end before the break, is when there has actually been a few times where I've been doing like either house cleansing or assessing a place for spirit activity, and sometimes I've gone, you know, through the home or the business or whatever, and there's like nothing. And so I just recommend that if people are experiencing weird things, you know, with lights, electricity, technology, you know, things being moved, stuff like that, and you don't really sense anything in the home, just have a seat outside and just kind of commune with the land and the area and just see if you can sense anything there. Because sometimes, especially if there's been any kind of, you know, people cutting down trees, you know, because they're expanding their house or whatever, it can sometimes provoke these land spirits who will become quite unhappy. And some, you can't really, you can't banish a land spirit. It's just not going to happen. So what you need to do is to find a way to appease them and to, you know, maybe replant some of those trees or whatever. But anyway, so that's all I just wanted to mention about that. But yeah, Elvira, why don't you lead us off with a little bit about what some mythical creatures are about.
Well, it's exciting. when I was talking, we were talking at the beginning, we're going to have two different versions here, and I really enjoy it. Because I kind of went to, you know, these ones like, you know, where you have, I'm like going the basilicas, centaurs, dragons, hippogriffins, I'm sorry, and, you know, griffins and phoenixes and unicorns. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was looking at those mystical creatures, and obviously Deb had some others, and I'm like, this is going to be real good. So I'm going to kind of throw myself into this, and I'm actually going to start with coyote. Coyote, or coyote, is a North American or North Amerindian being, and it's basically he is the archetypical trickster. And he's a culture hero, and he also is, you know, basically a fire thief. He has, so again, we have that same thing that we had with Loki, where that was part of what he was doing. And this is the Western mountains and plains. He has different versions of that throughout, you know, what we will call the American, North America, Amerindian, I have to remember how to say it, area. So he basically is a spirit of the night, and he also can be a flood bringer. So there are those. And then you're going to go into, he's also known as magical dog with magical powers and trickster, which, of course, we all know is, you know, he has, you know, the idea of humor and, you know, into, you know, from absurd situations, you know, that kind of a thing. And then you have another version, which, oh, and I have to say, he has a, his totem animal or brother is actually Little Wolf, you know, so he also has, you know, kind of like another name where he's used when he's a totem animal or, you know, some kind of a savior hero. And in the Chinook area, he's a little different, and he basically is not as trickster or mischievous. He's important hero, creator, Brang from the fog after the big flood. And, you know, he planted a feather, and that became the people of the various tribes. So he kind of comes in as a different version. Interesting enough, in the Hopi tradition, he is a trickster and responsible for the formation of Milky Way by his negligence in taking the lid off of a sealed pot and letting the stars escape. Of course, in California, California region, he has a relationship with the creators, and those are Eagle, Wolf, Fox, that they are responsible for good and wise things. And, of course, Coyote brings about the bad or, you know, introduction of death. So he kind of, he is a mythical creature, but he is not, and not as a deity specifically. So I thought that was interesting and opposite to all the things I was going to, you know, bring out about, you know, phoenixes and, you know, all these wonderful things that I have here. But one of those, I went through a lot, and, you know, I have a lot of different versions of things, but I'll go with the unicorn because I think that one, it really is in two, it's well known in the Chinese tradition as Kailin, K-Y-L-I-N. And, of course, we know it as the unicorn, and it has had, you know, many versions and variations, always with a single horn. And it's interesting because it's always twisted. And if you know that recently when they brought that out in more modern versions, it is not a twisted horn because that even for both the Chinese and the more ancient traditions of the European, it is the masculine and the feminine twisted together. So it represents the power and unity of both these energies. And, of course, it is gentle. It has a certain sense of purity, and but it can be fierce, you know, and it, you know, has a certain strength to it. So, you know, we, with one horn, you kind of want to be careful. And yeah. in the Chinese, it's basically set up as also benevolent and gentle, and the it also holds the elements of all four elements, like air, fire, water, and earth elements. But understand, Chinese also has, you know, the five elements, but I decided not to divert that energy. But it's wise, and it basically has goodwill, and it's benevolent. And personally, you know, even in India, they have a version of it. So it's kind of a universal mythical creature of a similar nature with, you know, in terms of the head, the horn, you know, they have, in India, it's a little more like a combination of a bunch of different animal parts, you know, like the boar's tusk, you know, the boar's head, tail, and, you know, feet that are, you know, horned and, you know, things like that. But it, it comes up as, and of course, narwhals, the actual narwhal or narwhal, is a version of that in terms of the actual existence of that animal or fish. I don't know. I think a fish or a mammal. I can't remember. But those are my, you know, takes on that. So I'm going to turn this back over to you.
Oh, yeah, I, you know, with mythical creatures, I believe, like, the best spirit allies are often the ones that are found right in our own backyard, you know. And so I know that I mentioned the Venus Loci a lot, and I think that that is just a very powerful spirit which has been woven into and has become, like, an underlying aspect of the land itself. And so I think if you kind of study the region where you live and find a quiet spot within the land, like a favorite spot, you can, you know, connect with the Venus Loci. And lots of times, if you can do that, you can connect to just about any other fairy or creature, I believe, that is within that Venus Loci. And so one of the ones that I, you know, this isn't, well, I'll start out. I'm going to start out with the one that is right in my backyard. It's a werewolf. it's called, in Wisconsin here, it's called the Beast of Bray Road. And the Beast of Bray Road is given to a wolf-like creature that's been sighted in Walworth County, Wisconsin. And so this creature has become a part of Wisconsin folklore and has been written about in a number of books. Most notably by the reporter Linda Godfrey, and she was a pretty cool lady. She passed away about a year or so ago, and I used to run into her years ago at some of our local festivals where she would do book signings. Anyway, so she was a reporter, and she started investigating the reports of this creature. And this, so this creature was named for the rural farm road where it was first sighted, which is Bray Road. And these first sightings happened in the 80s and 90s. And so Linda Godfrey was initially skeptical, but she, as she investigated these reports, she became more and more convinced of the sincerity of the witnesses. And so, although, you know, they say that most of the sightings were in the 80s and 90s, there's been more recent ones. And there also has been sightings that go back even further, like to the 1930s. But the Beast of Bray Road is usually described as between 6 and 7 feet tall with a humanoid body covered with fur or hair and with a head resembling a wolf. And so it's been observed sometimes moving on four legs, sometimes on two. And some have reported that the beast resembles a werewolf, while others say that it looks more like a Bigfoot. So it's, you know, it's really part of, like, the Wisconsin lore. I mean, there's been just some crazy reports of, you know, people almost hitting it with their car or scratch marks on the car, the creature running through, you know, the cornfields. It's never hurt anybody. And I believe that some recent reports were in 2018 and 2020. But I believe that the Beast of Bray Road is possibly a phantom nature spirit or part of the genius loci of that forested and rural area. Another one that is not in Wisconsin, but is it's called the Snarly Yowl. I love that name, Snarly Yowl. Mm. And that's a spectral black dog. And so, like, phantom black dogs are common in the folklore of, like, the British Isles and stuff, but also in North America. And lots of times they'll be reported to have, like, red or yellow glowing eyes, and they're usually described as being much larger than typical dogs. Mm-hmm. Like, they might even be, like, as big as a pony. And so they're usually seen in the woods, crossing, you know, lonely roads. They appear kind of frightening, but they usually disappear without harming anyone. And some say that they see these black dogs or snarly yowls at the site of fatal auto accidents. And so some, you know, consider seeing the snarly yowl death omen, but not always. Other people believe that they're reputed to be very protective, especially of travelers moving through the dark of night. And so, like in British folklore, they call it a black shuck, and it's usually described as a large black spectral dog. And that one is usually interpreted as a death omen. But in North America, the snarly yowl is also this giant, you know, black dog with huge paws. And it seems to like the mountainous areas. And so there's been reports of sightings of the snarly yowl back to the 1700s in the area of the Blue Ridge and South Mountain in Maryland. And also the mountains near Harper's Ferry, West Virginia. And also throughout the Appalachian Mountains. And it's similar to the black shuck, but it's not regarded as a death omen like the black shuck. And so I personally like the snarly yowl a lot, and I kind of created a servitor of a snarly yowl spirit to guard my book shadows. And I've got a whole page on him in my book. So I think that those are, you know, when you hear things, reports of, like, different weird sightings like this. I mean, I do joke about stuff like that. I happen to have a couple of, up in, you know, in the North Woods, I purchased at one of the small towns had local artists that made, like, these Bigfoot metal sculptures. And I do have one, you know, next to my cabin up north. And so, and I kind of have always Bigfoot, but then there, you know, the people that I hear that actually believe that they saw Bigfoot, when I listen to their stories, it really makes me think of, you know, what are they experiencing? Because I can tell that they have experienced something. And just like those of us that see fairies or other mythical creatures, I think it's, you know, possible that there might be, maybe there's a portal nearby. You know, I believe that these are interdimensional beings, and that's probably why, you know, nobody is able to find, like, you know, the skeleton of the snarly yowl or skeleton of the Bigfoot or whatever. But actually, you know, with Bigfoot, there's something, well, some of the things that are associated with Bigfoot is weird phenomena like orbs, time slips, and other strange stuff. But there's also many stories of a Bigfoot-like character in from the Native, many of the Native American tribes.
Yeah, I got one. It was a report hearing in the Journal of Chickasaw History and Culture. Reads, Indigenous people across the globe have had relationships with these creatures for hundreds of years and often associate them with natural or spiritual phenomena. Various tribes describe Bigfoot as an enigma shrouded in power and magic. At times, he is perceived as violent and crude, and in other instances, he is a helpful partner among tribes. General descriptions range from a hairy beast with gray, white, black, brown, or red hair, ranging from 7 to 10 feet, and weighing from 300 to 600 pounds of pure muscle, and a howl that can cause a person's hair to stand on end. So,
wow.
Yeah, I actually did. I put Bigfoot out there. yeah, and it's like, I've never seen Bigfoot. I have heard a couple of people. I know my friend CJ, he doesn't live here in Wisconsin. He moved to Ohio. But he always told me that his thoughts were that Bigfoot was much like other mythical creatures or fairies in that it was an interdimensional being. And so, you know, it kind of makes you wonder, you know, what people might be experiencing. We just don't know. And that is what makes it fun and interesting, just to hear people's different stories.
Right. Wow.
So that local folklore, you just don't know.
Well, and it's funny you were saying that, and I was looking at my notes because, you know, I went and said, well, what's local to my area here? And you mm-hmm. said, and I looked at this, and I'm going, oh, my God. We have an Ozark howler and they call it Ozark howler and the lost silver mine, which is a creature
oh, wow.
with piercing red eyes and bone chilling
oh.
howl. And I'm like, well,
oh,
we
wow.
have one too.
Oh, that's so interesting. I think,
I
know. It's there's like so much lore from around the world. And a lot of it,
yeah.
you know, some countries have documented lore. Like, you know, the UK
mm-hmm.
and fairies and all that stuff. But here, I think that there are different land creatures or nature spirits in North America that people talk about but are usually dismissed or laughed at or whatever. I know I've
mm-hmm.
absolutely been guilty of doing that a couple of times. But it's like, wait a minute, you know, this often sounds a lot like some of the stories that are heard from folklore around the world.
And, you know, I really agree with you that they're interdimensional. I feel that now that, you know, in talking about what we've got going here, it would make perfect sense because it's an interdimensional means you come and you go, and it's like you're going to different places. You don't have to be, you know, you're not planted here, like, you know, we don't do, you know, I mean, we physical body have to go travel. We get in a car, we get in a plane, we get in things, and we travel. But the mm-hmm. going to and from it, in an interdimensional way would make it why we have such common traits and descriptions the world.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that. I mean, it's kind of just, it hit me while we were talking, and I looked at this and I'm going, oh my gosh, you know, here it is too. Well, but I mean, I'm not sure at this point,
yeah.
you know,
yeah,
where we're
I
at
just,
in
you know,
terms of that.
The, one other thing I wanted to bring up, and just for like, for phenomena that might, you know, that people might commonly experience is the thing with orbs. So those are, you know, luminous anomalies that are sometimes recorded like at haunted places, but
mm-hmm.
I'm finding that there are many people that believe that that orbs are manifestations of fairies. And
mm-hmm.
so some of them, you know, they're usually not visible to the naked eye, but sometimes they're viewed on, you know, when people take photos or videos or on other devices. But so
some believe that like orbs are like spheres of electromagnetic energy produced by spirit. And so, or that they're even the actual embodiment of spirit. And so most of them are round, and they can be anywhere in size, from like a golf ball to the size of a basketball. And some of them will be white, but then some of them will be different colors. And some people will see like trail streaks of light. And and some of them will move in really odd, nonsensical directions. And so so I think that anytime, I think that there is something to that. I don't think that every time somebody sees an orb that it's a spirit manifestation, but I think that often, especially if you can see, like, if they seem more intricate, like when you look at the orb, and sometimes you can see, like, different designs or almost, like, faces within it, I think that there might be some, there might be something to that. I think it's an unidentified energy form. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, that's all I was going to say. It's just like they're like unidentified, and so we don't really know.
Mm-hmm. Well, and interesting is that when I was, because there's some things here I was looking at, and I was going, oh, well, you know, we mentioned Will-o'-the-Wisp, and actually here in what would be Northwest Arkansas, which is near Northeast Oklahoma and Southwest Missouri, that little corner, they have what they call spook lights, which are basically these globes, these ghost lights. And they're over, you know, water and marshes and, of course, in England, they're bogs and swamps. But, you know, it's just because the Ozarks are basically full of rivers and lakes and ponds and things like that. And so it would be kind of like in that area, but it is definitely spectral in that sense. So, you know, I was thinking, it was like, it's right around the corner. It's in your door. It's your backyard kind of thing.
I'm going to send you later on. I wish I could show our listeners, but later on, I'm going to send you, I have a picture hanging in my room that I took some years ago. There was two bears right outside of our cabin because we had sunflower seeds in our bird feeder. And those bears, they love sunflower seeds. And after a while, I had to stop putting it out for a while because they loved them so much. And so anyway, there's a mama bear and a baby bear are right outside our window. And my son opened the window, not right on top of them, but like further down a ways, you know, a window that was further away from them, and took a picture. And it was at nighttime, and you can see the bears in the photo, but you can also see there is this huge orb right next to the bear. And you can just tell it just doesn't look like something. It doesn't look like dust. It doesn't look like something that you can identify. It just looks otherworldly. It's just crazy. I'm actually staring at this picture right now as I'm talking to you, but I'm going to take a picture of that picture and send it to you later on.
Great. That would be great, because at this point, I know we're getting close to our closing, but, you know, this is so fascinating, and I enjoy it, and it's funny because when I was doing things at a place called Isis Oasis up in Geyserville, which is a location, I don't need to go into it, but they would do symposiums and they would do, you know, events and rituals and things like that just in general. It was never specific. And whenever they got into the big hall and they had all their stuff in there, you know, all the things there, you could see orbs all over that area. They were all over, and people were, you know, kind of like nudging you and going, look at the arm over there, you know, and that kind of thing, you know, taking pictures. So they're obviously very attracted to, you know, rituals and things like that too.
Well, so I guess the kind of summarize or whatever, I would say like the fae and other magical creatures can be friends or foes, much like us humans. And so it's always a good idea to do a little research and kind of figure out what you're encountering and, you know, show respect and play nice with the friendlies and kind of avoid those maybe that are known to be malicious. And always give nature respect and care for the land. And I think, you know, taking all those things into account, that just will pave the way for better experiences. How about you, Elvira? You have any final thoughts here?
Well, adding to the respect is, you know, do offerings to, you know, the spirits in the land. And, you know, whether it's specifically something that you know that what you're seeing is liking, you know, or just, you know, some, you know, a gentle offering that is, you know, food and you know, beverage or whatever. I know that's pretty much all that I have, you know, ever really done and found that it's viable. And, you know, even something like what you did with the Bigfoot structure is, you know, an offering to the energy of that energy being. Being respectful is a big one.
Yes.
And discerning about whether or not they're, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you got to realize you're going to play with a big bear, that they may be gentle, but they also have that other side. And you have to, you know, be conscious of the line that gets drawn in where it can be, you know, activated. So.
Yes.
That's my last word.
Oh, absolutely. Well, thank you. Thanks. This has been a fun show.
Yes.
So I have to do a little maintenance work here at the end here. So for readings or root work, you can find Elvira and I on Hulu Psychics and also on AIR. And you can find Elvira also online at www.elvira.com. And you can also find her at www.milk-and-honey.com. And so, and you can find me also at on my website at www.bewitchingbee.com. And so I guess that kind of wraps up our theme for the past month of trickster energies and dancing with nature. So then next week, Thursday, we are going to kind of start off with a new theme, which is planting the seeds of renewal. And we will start that off by talking about the primordial goddess Gaia. So for now, it is time for us to say goodbye. And until next time, witch on, witch well, and witch wisely. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio broadcast on the LMC Radio Network. Our podcast airs live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Central, and is available for download. Questions or comments on this show or ideas for upcoming shows can be sent to our website at witchpriestessandcauldron.com. That's witchpriestessandcauldron.com. Until next time, merry meet, merry part, and merry meet again. Blessed be.